Welcome to the podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. Our podcast weaves together the message and a taste of the music that we experience each Sunday morning as we root our lives in grace through worship here at The Table. More and more people are finding their way to The Table through this podcast, so if you are one of the many, many folks who tune in each week from other parts of California, other parts of our country, or even from other places in the world, we would invite you to take a next step in growing in faith here at The Table. You can do that online at our website, thetableumc.org. There you'll find links to social media and also a way to make a deep commitment to our community to express how you hope to root your life in grace, to grow in faith, to reach in love, and to give generously. If you're one of the many people listening to this but haven't quite walked through the door of the sanctuary yet on a Sunday morning, we would love to welcome you into the beauty of this sanctuary. We gather each Sunday for worship at 9:30 and at 11. Our address is 5265 H Street in East Sacramento.
Love is, it always was, the longing place inside my heart to know.
Today we're rooting our message in the Gospel of Matthew, and I'll be reading from the 22nd chapter, verses 15 to 22. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap Jesus in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, and they said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and you teach the way of God in accordance with truth. You show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, being aware of their malice, said to them, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius, and so Jesus said to them, "Whose head is this, and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." And then he said to them, "Give therefore the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. We ask that God would add a blessing to the reading and the hearing of the word today.
I was there to hear your warning cry. I'll be there.
Sarah and I were part of an intentional Christian community while she was in medical school in Minneapolis and before I went to seminary in New York City. And a number of the folks in our Christian community had been rooted in the ways of Christian nonviolence and peacemaking. They were coming from Mennonite backgrounds, from Quaker backgrounds, from Bruderhof communities. And some of the ways that our community actively tried to practice nonviolence, well, one of them is something that is called war tax resistance. And so the basic idea is that you refuse to pay the portion of federal income tax that goes to support our military-industrial complex. And so there were folks in our community who chose to work and to only make income just below the level where they would have to pay taxes. And then there were other folks in our community who chose that they were going to pay a percentage, which at the time was around 39, 40, 41%, because that's the portion of our budget that doesn't go to the military. And so they would pay that portion of their income taxes. And in doing so, they were choosing to risk going to jail and incurring huge fines. And what they were holding was that the law of the land is not what they're going to live into. Instead, they're going to choose what their sense is of God's law that calls us to this deeper place. And you see some of the images there. Thou shalt not kill. If you love me, keep my commandments. And so they were rooted in this, and they risked jail time in our community. And I don't remember my dad. My dad's here today. My family's in town. I don't remember my dad saying, or anybody else for that matter, saying directly that you guys are nuts. But I'm pretty confident that a number of people around looked on at that kind of passionate idealism and thought we were pretty nuts. That was a fairly common thing. And so it's not lost on me that as the global church is reflecting on this text that invites us into questions about giving to God and giving to empire and how we do this, that I find myself at the airport on Monday picking up my family and then trying to figure out how are we going to live together, because I don't know if maybe you avoid traps in your family about how you're going to we have some touchy issues in our family. And this is one of them at moments, right? And so here we are. The global church's reading is this text that just like drives into the place that is a trap for me. And maybe you don't have these. God bless you if you don't. But I do, and I wish I could say I was better at navigating these traps than I am sometimes. And we've had varying degrees of success and keep trying to come back to grace in that. And we find our story this morning, Jesus navigating those same kind of traps in his day. These complex ways that the world is coming together, and it is a politically loaded trap for Jesus. So the Pharisees and the Herodians, they are trying to trap Jesus in this question, and Susan shared this for us. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor? So a little historical context might help us to understand this a little bit more this morning, and we're going to continue this reading next week when we gather to celebrate baptism of maybe 17 or a couple, maybe 18, 19 people next Sunday. David Lose, who's a New Testament scholar, he writes about it like this. It's not simply taxes in general that are up for debate here, but it's a particular tax that they're asking Jesus about. See, in first century Palestine, Jews were required to pay a number of taxes. There was a temple tax. There was a land tax. These are just a couple of them, a customs tax. And the tax, though, that's in question here is a particularly onerous one, and that's the imperial tax. It's a tribute that they're paying to Rome, okay? Rome is their occupier. So just hold the irony of that for a moment. The empire is demanding that they pay a tax so that they can be under their oppressed control. And so that's what's happening in this moment is, are you going to give a denarius, that was their coin, to the empire or not? And the Herodians, that is a group of people who was pro-imperial tax. So these were folks who you could imagine probably benefited from the empire working in the way that empire worked. And so they were for paying this tax. And then they're not mentioned in this story, but the nationalists would have been around as well. And this would have been a majority of the Jewish people. And they would have been against the imperial tax. Well, the Pharisees, their whole movement is about trying to be as devoted to the law as possible. So in order to be devoted to the law as much as you can, you should start probably with the first commandment, right? Well, this coin, does anybody have a coin? Dad, do you have a coin? Is anybody, come on, I need a coin. Nobody carries a coin? There we go. Awesome. Anybody else? This is a great way. I can make a lot of cash. So So what's happening is they're looking at this coin is the Pharisees are faced with breaking the first two laws of the commandments. Like, to love God. I am your God. Well, on this coin is not a picture of Jesus or of God. It's a picture of Caesar. And it says, Caesar is Lord. And then on the other side, it says, Caesar is high priest. So to actually have these coins in your pockets in their day was to break God's first two commandments. That's a pretty precarious place. And so what's happening in this moment is that Jesus is like pushing into them. They're pushing into Jesus, actually. Like, what should we do? And he's stuck. Because on one side, if he says, yes, pay the tax, then the nationalists are going to be upset. If he says, don't pay the tax, the other side, it's like today. What do we do about tax reform? Either way you go, right? Or kneeling at the national anthem to say that we have got to find better ways to police in this country. Like, wherever you go, it's a trap question because people on every side are going to be ready to try to take you down. And so, is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor? So he either has to discount the nationalists or the Herodians. And so Jesus says, whose face is on the coin? He asks them to, like, physically. He's not just going to talk about it in the abstract. He says, give me a coin. And in doing that, the Pharisees have to reach into their pockets and acknowledge their own complicity in empire. Oops, I'm supposed to not do this, but I have it right here for you to look at. And so they unwittingly dig into their pocket. They hand this over to Jesus. And in that, they're acknowledging their own complicity. They're breaking God's law as well. And Jesus says, whose face is on it? And they say, the emperor. And Jesus holds up the coin. It's a graven idol. This is an idol, is what he's holding to them. And then he turns the tables. For anyone with eyes to see, on those folks that were trying to accuse him, he says, give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and give to God the things that are God's. And I want to invite us to just hold the depth of that response for a moment. Because frankly, I don't really know what to do with it. I really don't know what to do with it. Is Jesus saying we owe nothing to Caesar? Like, everything is God's? Give to God what is God? Like, is that everything? Or is Jesus saying that we should give taxes to Caesar? Because this clearly is Caesar's. It's got Caesar's picture on it, right? Is he saying, like, give the things to Caesar's that are his, or and then give the rest of your whole life to God? The text doesn't really resolve this for us. And so what we learn then is that the Herodians and the Pharisees, they just are in awe and they go away. Jesus doesn't accept the terms of their question. He turns the tables over, and then I believe what happens here is he's saying we all need to spend some time reflecting on the coins in our pockets, our own lives. Like, where are our loyalties? What's our ultimate concern? Our why? In a sense, it's this question of, like, how does your life align with God's hope for the world? And how is your life entangled in empire? And what are you going to do about it? And for me this week, it's this sense that Jesus is taking the coins, naming complicity and how we're all compromised. There's no pure place to stand. And he's saying, what is your legacy going to be? What is your all-in moment? Where are your coins going to actually go? Are you going to be known for giving this over to God or to empire? And friends, that's at the heart of what we do here in what we call our deep commitments. We try to come back every fall to ask one another, what is our hope for aligning our lives with God's this coming year? And we're inviting folks to fill those out and to share those as we celebrate 7 years together here through this worship series that's simply called Zoe, which is a Greek word for life, for the fullness of God's unfolding grace. We're looking back on our own community's growth from a seed to a startup to growing and multiplying and hopefully maturing and establishing and then maybe thinking about passing on our own legacy. And in this story this morning, we find Jesus taking on his accusers, turning the tables upside down, and then saying, how is your life aligned with God's longing? How are you investing it? And so he looks at Caesar's image and he says, what is our legacy going to be? Like, where are our coins going to be invested? For me, these questions of legacy were really, really raw and real on Tuesday morning. This is my daughter's class. We got to go in. They do something called a birthday circle. And so her teachers gather us around. And so we sing a song together, and I'm not going to sing it for you right now, but we sing a song together. And at each time we sing the song, the child goes around the sun. And when they do, the family gets to share something about their child at birth. And then at 1, and then at 2, and then at 3, and we went all the way to 8. My dad is sitting next to me, and my dad's like, if they were doing this for me, we would be here for a long time. But Eleanor's only 8, but 8 is an amazing moment in the life of this beautiful little child. And so you're thinking back on like, what is the legacy that we want to pass on to her and to the future generations? And it makes me look at, like, what is my ultimate concern right now? And so, as I've held that, two stories have come up for me this week. And I want to share about two faithful, beautiful women that have gone before us. And their stories are really different. They're quick stories. But I want to invite you to just reflect on this and hold your own life story. The first is a woman who was an elementary school teacher. And she married an entrepreneur, and because his work brought them out here, she followed him to this space, to California. And their home was immaculate, like immaculate. And on the outside, at least, their life was like as put together as you can possibly imagine. She was faithful in her involvement in her local church. Every Sunday, she had her place in the pew. She was part of a finance committee. She was known for taking the offering home to count it. She was trusted, trustworthy. And at the end of her life, it was folks from her community of faith, her church, and her neighbors who watched over her in love. They were there every day. Her relatives, her closest relatives, lived over in San Francisco, and these were folks who these were folks whose lives were really busy. They were traveling the world, and they were making million-dollar financial decisions before breakfast in the morning, and they lived in a phenomenal high-rise, and they didn't have the time. They couldn't make the time to watch over their own relative in love. And so it was a neighbor who was there with this woman just the moments before she took her last breath and passed away. And so after she did, what we had learned that every penny, her home, and every penny that this person had collected all of her life, it was all passed on to that family in San Francisco that had the wealth but didn't have the time to spend with her. And that's somebody's real story. And Jesus says, give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. The second woman that I want to tell you about, her story is different. She married a man who had served in World War II. And they lived on the edge in ways that, honestly, I cannot fathom. He struggled to ever find work, and she struggled even more to do the same. In their apartment, I had a chance to go there just one time, and their apartment was like an advertisement for a show on hoarding, right? There was just stuff everywhere. And this person was really active in her local community of faith as well. She was the chair for something that they called the Sunshine Committee. I'd never heard of this before. But the idea of the Sunshine Committee was that you would send notes and cards to help celebrate transitions in people's lives or markers of where they were journeying. And it was beautiful to me that she was the chair of the Sunshine Committee, because she presented most of the time as pretty dreary. Like, that was her way often of moving in the world, at least the time that I knew her. She and her husband had a really, really old car. And when they could get it to turn on, they would go around our neighborhood here. and they would go into Compton's, and it was so disheveled, like both of them, that I had multiple conversations with the staff at Compton's, like, how do we watch over them? How do we help? Because he would walk in with his pants barely on and his shirt totally unbuttoned, and he had been spending all day collecting cans. And they lived like three blocks away and had a car. But if you saw them on the street, I am confident that all of us would have assumed that they did not have an apartment. She passed away in that tiny, chaotic apartment. And just 4 days later, her husband did as well. And when they did, we learned a few months later that every penny that she had literally ever come across, she was passing along. This almost homeless woman shared over $500,000 upon her death with her local church. She gave over $250,000, over $250,000 to the United Methodist Committee on Relief to help with things like floods and fires. She gave $250,000 to help revitalize churches in the area. Jesus says, give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. So I've been holding all of this week and looking back on my daughter's 8 years of life and going back through Instagram, and I found a picture from us on our family vacation in the summer. And we went up with friends from that community in Minneapolis that I opened with to the Pacific Northwest, and we were at Olympic National Park along the Ho River. It's amazing. And I was reminded of something that I had never seen before while we were hiking there. This is called a nurse log. In this ancient forest in the Pacific Northwest, you literally find trees growing out of trees. I'd never seen that before. Trees growing out of trees. These nurse logs play critical roles in the health of this vital forest in the Pacific Northwest. So as we all know, like, forests need sunlight, and we need moisture and nutrients and places for the next generation to sprout, places for seeds to grow up as startups. And these fallen trees become just that. So you can imagine if a seed falls down, the likelihood that it's going to find its way into soil and not the shrubs that are around and get enough light, it's next to none. But because that log rises up over the ground, the seed can fall into it. It then has the context and the environment to start to become a sprout and then to grow up. And you see right there this huge tree growing out of another tree. In these dying fallen trees, you literally witness the passing on of a legacy of a healthy, beautiful tree growing up out of something that is dead and nursing life. That's an amazing image. Jesus says, give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. And so think just, not even just up in the Pacific Northwest, but right here. Like, legacy in that same way is alive in this very space. We've all walked in the back, right back there, you'll see a tree, and it has names of people on it. Saints from this space who didn't know that you would be sitting here today, but their generosity made possible that beautiful stained glass, the cross that we gaze upon, the pews that we gather in. Generations passing on a legacy, and that was brought over from San Francisco. Like, those were individually crafted pieces brought here from the Bay so many decades ago. And it's not just back then, it's in these last few years as well. See, we had a refrigerator break down a couple months ago. And a family in our community said, you know what, we want to gift a new refrigerator so that the children, the 3- and 4-year-olds that make their life together here in our preschool, so that they will have what they need to grow together in this space. And then a person passed on a gift that allowed us to seal and secure that stained glass so that it will be there for generations ahead.
The technology that's in front of us. When we started 7 years ago, someone had to sit here with an overhead projector and put the thing down like this. Most of us don't even know overhead projectors like that exist anymore. We held it from 1959 until that moment and kept using it. So this technology is someone's passing on of a legacy, or this space that's never had air conditioning. And just last week, we had engineers here looking at how can we bring HVAC into this space, because a family is passing on the legacy that they inherited of $60,000 so that we could have heat and air, central heat and air in this space. Hopefully by next summer. Come on, trustees. And this wall that we're working on outside and the dreams that we have, this, friends, is what legacy looks like. It's Christian community. This is life found in the mystery and the unfolding of God's grace. And so our children are watching us, whether we're literally on the circle with them celebrating a birthday, or if we're just gathering in this space, our children are seeing what we're doing. They're noticing the coins that we hold, and they're asking questions like, how are we going to be known for giving our lives over to God, so that the dreams of future generations might start up and mature and grow in ways that we've never imagined. Amen. Father,